Morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Welcome once again to Chatham Community Church. My name is Jaime. I'm one of the pastors here. I'm glad to see y'all here this morning. Particularly warm welcome to those of you who are guests. We're so glad that you're here this morning, and I hope that if you've not received it yet, by the end of the service, you're able to get one of our welcome bags. It'll give you some more information about what we're doing here in Chatham County and what we're about as you consider whether this is the church where you want to spend your time in Chatham County yet. That what's in that bag will help you. And also, you'll get some amazing gifts from local vendors. So make sure if you haven't grabbed one of those bags, you grab it on your way out. And before I get to the sermon, just want to walk us through a few things that are particular about today. Earlier this month, we had a congregational meeting. And what we did at that congregational meeting was share some updates about some options for what could be next for this campus. Those of you who've been around for a bit know that we've been looking for a while to see what God might be leading us to next. We shared early in the month acknowledging that opportunities come and go very quickly here in Chatham County, and that some of the opportunities that we shared at that meeting might not be available the next day and might not be available in the coming weeks, and there might be new opportunities, and opportunities did change as the month progressed. We recorded that conversation, not just because of the specific opportunities that we shared about, but because of the types of opportunities. We wanted to share that with the congregation. We wanted to get your feedback, both about the specific options, but also about the type of options. And you watched that video, you shared feedback, we listened, we processed that feedback, we gathered as a leadership team, we prayed, we discussed what we were seeing and what we were hearing from one another, from you, and from God. And we had set aside this day to take a congregational vote as needed, if there was anything we needed to vote on specific to one or more of the options. And so we are going to vote today. And today's vote specifically has to do with the storefront location in downtown Pittsburgh on East Street, the renovation project there. It's the one that's next to the True Value that used to be a dollar store and a dollar store before that. I think it was at one point Family Dollar and at one point Dollar Tree. It's that location there on East Street. Let me just give you some quick stats in case you haven't seen the video or need an update. The space we're looking at is 8,400 square feet that we would renovate for a worship space and a Chatham Kids space. And there's also 1,200 square feet of already prepared office space that we could also take on. Here we have 6,600 square feet. So it's a significant increase in space. The seating capacity in the worship space as we renovated is estimated to be 225 to 250. Right now, we have 119 cushioned seats here, and with folding chairs, we can probably get up to 140. So part of what this opens the door is for us to go back to being at one service. So it opens the door for that, and then also opens the door for increasing growth. The Chatham Kids space, which is a significant pain point right now here. So for example, our fourth and fifth graders' room, the size of it doesn't allow for us to have age-appropriate furniture in there, right? So kids are sitting on the floor. Now, we've found ways to manage around that. This space and the renovation, we're estimating twice the space for Chatham Kids. The rent would be $12,800 for the 90s for all 9,600 square feet, and that's compared to $10,000 that we're paying right now, a little over $10,000 for 6,600. So the price per square foot would be cheaper, even though the overall rent would increase. And the term will likely be 10 years. The term will likely be 10 years, but we're working with the option of being able to sublet it. If we were to find the right permanent place, the right piece of land, or the right building that we could buy that would be for us. Now, even if we found a great piece of land, buying and building would likely take 3 to 5 years. So even if we found it the day after we signed the lease, we would still be in there for a significant amount of time. Let me show you some sort of pictures of what we think this might look like. This is what the storefront might look like with our sign visible from East Street all the time. This is a mock-up of what the worship space would look like. And this is a mock-up of what the welcome and lobby space would look like, which you all are aware we're severely limited here in that kind of space. Now, the upfit estimate that we are currently working with is $750,000. Construction costs are high right now. That's just a reality. We know it is not cheap. But between the funds that we have in our campus expansion fund, which we've been designating for things like this, we've been saving up for things like this, and some budget reallocation, we estimate that we can set aside already available and have available $650,000. So that brings us very close. That means already cash on hand, we're likely to have almost the full amount for the project. Now, we might have to take a loan out for the rest, but we will only make that decision if we come to the point where it seems absolutely necessary. Pittsboro is one of the fastest growing towns in the state. And this location puts us closer to where most of the growth in Pittsboro is going to be happening. And it positions us to have greater capacity to meet the people who are moving in and will continue to move into Pittsboro, to develop them as authentic followers of Jesus, to meet them with the gospel and invite them to follow Jesus, and to invite them to engage our world and Pittsboro for good. We believe that investing in this is an investment in the work that God has called us to do here in Chatham County. Now, we're still in process with the town in terms of permitting, in terms of approvals, all that sort of thing. This isn't a done deal yet. We're holding a vote today for two reasons. One, we want the landlord who's been holding this property for us, this space for us, because he feels very positive about us as potential tenants. We're holding this vote to let him know that we're serious. We've told them, hey, there's no way we can move forward with even signing a lease unless the congregation is on board. So we're holding this as a sign to him to say, hey, we're serious about this. And also so that once the approvals come in, once we overcome all the hurdles and check all the boxes for the town, we're able to move on the upfit as quickly as possible. Like I said, we received your feedback about this location among all the others. And your feedback about this location was incredibly supportive. There were a number of very good questions and even some significant concerns, but on the whole, the feedback was incredibly supportive. It's worth noting, every one of the staff that work primarily here in Pittsboro are supportive and excited for this move. So the leadership team is now asking you as a congregation, as partners, to vote. And here's what we're seeking approval for. We're seeking approval for additional expenditures of up to $750,000 for the renovations of the East Street property, pending town approval. What that means is that we're not asking you to approve a check that we're going to write tomorrow. We're asking you to give us your approval so that if this becomes a possibility or an eventuality, we can move on it quickly. And our Constitution requires us to have your approval before we spend a certain amount above our budget. And this certainly crosses into that. The funds that we're going to spend, like I said, are going to come from our cash on hand and in the campus expansion fund, our budget reappropriation, and possibly a loan. The ballot for that vote is in the seat back pocket in front of you. If you've signed the partner agreement, you are eligible to vote. If you haven't, we'd still be glad to have your feedback. So if you want to write anything about the property or share any feedback about that, please feel free to fill that out on the back and write your note and whatever. We want to hear from you. But if you're a partner, we invite you to fill out that ballot. It has a box for you to check and say that you're a partner, and then it has two boxes, two options to tell us what you think about this property. What you're going to do is at the end of the service, you're going to drop it off. There's a basket in the high table that's near the door. You're going to drop off your vote there. I'm going to be here in the front. If you feel like I'm not ready to vote yet, I have a couple of questions. At the end of the service, I'm going to be here. I'm going to stay up front. You come and ask whatever question you have. We want you to be able, if you're going to vote feeling like you have the information you need to make the vote. So I'll be here to answer the questions, and we thank you for your ongoing support, your ongoing feedback, and your ongoing prayer. If this doesn't end up being where God is leading us, we are continuing to look and hope and pray that God opens the right door at the right time, and we will continue to share with you as things become available and as things progress. All right, hard shift to the sermon now, folks. Hannah and I were in Chicago this summer, and we caught a show. And during the show, one of the performer it included him doing a plate spinning trick. This is not him, but this is what he was doing, more or less. We were very close to the stage, and because we were so close to the stage, it became remarkable to me. I was able to see how remarkable a trick this is, or how remarkable this sort of talent is. It takes a lot of skill to do the plate spinning trick. It takes a lot to get the plate spinning at first, to get it to balance, and then to keep it going while doing all sorts of things with that plate spinning. The performer needed balance, he needed dexterity, he needed focus, and he also needed wisdom and humility to know when the plate was already close to falling so that he could stop, grab the plate, do some sort of flourish, and start again. He needed to know when he needed to reset and restart. It was incredibly impressive to watch, and as I watched, it became apparent to me why plate spinning is sometimes used as a metaphor for life. Because it feels like it takes a whole lot to get things going and keep things going in life, and it takes a whole lot to know when to pause some of the things, when to reset some of the things, when to recenter ourselves before things fall and collapse. And let's be honest, we don't always get it right, and many of us have had one or two, or maybe more, we're not counting, right? Plates fall and crash at some point in our life. We're often looking for resources to help us know how to keep the plate spinning, and which plates to spin, and which plates to stop spinning. We're looking for resources that'll help us do it better, or we're on the lookout to see who has figured this out, who's actually spinning the plates well, and what we might learn from them. Because we all want to be able to steward our lives well, don't we? And at its best, that's what this metaphor is about. This metaphor is about stewarding our lives best, or well. That's what keeping the plate spinning is about. It's about managing the complexities of life, and its sometimes competing and confusing demands. So who do you know that stewards their life well? Who do you know that seems to have the right plate spinning and spinning well? They're likely the kind of people that you've learned a lot from in life. They're likely the kind of people whose example you've followed. All throughout the fall, we're looking at the life of someone. We're looking at the life of Jesus as we make our way through the early chapters of the Gospel of Mark. What we're seeing in Jesus is God's all-in commitment to save humanity. And as we're looking at Jesus' life, we keep hearing and keep seeing God, keep sensing God's invitation to us to go all in with him, to respond to his all-in commitment with our all-in commitment, to trust him fully, to follow him boldly, to obey what he's called us to follow and model our lives after the one who gave it all in order to bring wholeness, forgiveness, salvation, and restoration to humanity, to you and I. We've already seen Jesus use his authority, as we've read through the Gospel of Mark, in ways that make him worth trusting with all of our lives, that make him worth going all in for. And we're going to see some of that in today's passage as well. But what becomes apparent also as you walk through the Gospels and as you walk through these early chapters of Mark is that Jesus is someone who stewards his life well. He's someone who has to deal with competing demands and different things that come into tension. He is one who has to figure out how to balance, how to spin the plates well. He manages competing tensions, he manages competing demands, and he remains committed to the purpose for which he came, to save humanity, to bring redemption, to bring forgiveness, to bring salvation through his life, death, and resurrection. And he invites us to follow him in that life, to follow him into the life he models for us, a life that is lived to the fullest for all time. In today's passage, we're going to see some of the principles and some of the values that contribute to a life that is stewarded well, a life that is managed well, a life where we keep the right plates spinning at the right time. So let's learn as we look at the life of Jesus. Let's learn from him. Let's follow the example. Let's go all in. The passage Jonathan read for us opens just as Jesus has left the synagogue where we met him last week. He had been teaching, and the teaching had provoked amazement in the community. And in the midst of that teaching, which is a very public one, in the synagogue, it becomes apparent that a man in the synagogue is suffering under the oppression of an evil spirit, and he confronts Jesus, and Jesus doesn't hesitate to bring freedom to that man. That's part of why he came. And because of both his teaching and this moment where freedom gets brought to this man, word starts to spread in the village. People leave the synagogue and start going around the village to tell of what happened. And as evening comes, a crowd gathers at the place where Jesus is staying. They have gathered at the door of the house he has gone to. And among that crowd of people that have gathered, there are people who need healing. And there are people who are also feeling like they're living under the oppression of evil spirits. They need freedom. And Jesus meets that crowd by meeting the need, by bringing healing, and by bringing freedom. But before the crowd gathers, and before the evening is spent healing and bringing freedom, Jesus is alerted that there's someone in need in the household. That there's a member of the household who is ill, Simon's mother-in-law. Simon is one of his disciples. Let me remind us what the text says happened. Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they immediately told Jesus about her. So he went to her, took her hand, and helped her up. The fever left her, and she began to wait on them. Note that Jesus heals here in a very private setting. He doesn't just heal and bring freedom when there is an audience. He doesn't show compassion only when there are others to impress. He is the same before the many. He is the same before the few. And he is the same when there's only one. Jesus has integrity. Jesus has integrity. And this makes him worth following. Jesus is consistent in his character. And he is consistent in his intent or his purpose. He is consistent publicly, and he is consistent privately. And that makes him worth trusting with our lives. Jesus doesn't have a public persona and a private persona. Now, sure, some interactions that are public might look slightly different than some interactions that are private. But his character and his intent never vary. There's no mask with Jesus. He is who he is, no matter where he is. Now, there are plenty of things that make life difficult to manage, that make it difficult to keep the plates spinning well. But being one person in one setting and a different person in another magnifies those complexities by a whole lot. And Jesus shows us, and he models for us, that consistency in character and consistency intent are essential to a life well lived, a life well stewarded, a life well managed. And that even when it is difficult to hold to integrity, it is always worth it. It is always worth it. So think about your life. Are there places where it feels like your character and intent are different from others? Where it feels like your character and purpose are different? Where it feels like you're one person? And I'm not talking about some things you dial down or dial up, but it feels like you've got a mask. Now, maybe you've been conditioned to think you have to wear that mask. There are lots of reasons why we put on those masks. Today's a great day to take it off. Folks, if you're feeling like it's hard to spin the plates of life, like it's hard to manage, like it's hard to figure out, you're making it exponentially harder on yourself by being one person in one setting and one person in another. Jesus' life wasn't easy. Managing the tensions wasn't easy. And yet he modeled that doing it and keeping integrity was worth it. Was worth it. His life bore the best fruit. He calls us into that integrity, not from a place of privilege, but from a place of having gone through it. Having been tested. And having proven that it is worth it. So if you're wearing the mask, take it off. If you've put it on intentionally, repent. Turn to Jesus. You'll receive forgiveness. You'll receive restoration. And you'll be freed from something that is already making it incredibly hard to live a life well lived and a life well managed. Let's return for a moment to the text, because I want us to linger for just a little bit on the healing itself so we can draw a bit more of what makes Jesus worth going all in on. Something to note is that this is Jesus' first healing, in the Gospel of Mark. Now, I know I mentioned that there's healing in the crowds, but the crowds come just after this. What he did before was a deliverance. He brought freedom from demonic oppression. This is his first healing of a physical ailment. And note the progression of this healing. Jesus is made aware that there's a need. And as soon as he's made aware that there's a need, he draws near to the person in need. He takes her hand. He lifts her up. And as he lifts her up, she is no longer sick. Now think about sort of the public settings that we've seen Jesus in already and that we're about to see Jesus in, whether it's in the synagogue, engaging in this sort of back and forth teaching, or managing a large crowd. This is distinct, and that it is a distinctly beautiful and tender moment, a moment of closeness. This tenderness of Jesus, a Jesus who sees the need and hears it, a Jesus who draws close, a Jesus who makes contact and makes connection, a Jesus who lifts up, a Jesus whose very presence causes what's ailing us to leave. This tenderness is available to all of us. The tenderness of Jesus is available to you today. Where do you need it? Where might you need Jesus to draw near? Where might you need Jesus to make a connection? Where might you need Jesus to help you up? Where might you need the very presence of Jesus to cause what is ailing you to depart? Up to this point, we've seen evidence of Jesus' authority, but words have always been involved. He's always said something that's provoked something to happen, and yet here, no words are spoken. Here, we see a level of authority that requires not a single utterance. It seems like it's simply his presence. And contained in his presence, his very intent, his very will, his very commitment to his mission and his purpose that is so strong and so consistent and so certain and so authoritative that without any words, his very bent on bringing healing causes the illness to depart. And Jesus wants to bring that intent, that will, that mission, that commitment to bear in our lives. So where do you need that from God today? Invite God. Invite God in his tender, compassionate care to bring healing and freedom wherever you need it today. Invite him to draw near. Invite him to connect. Invite him to reach out. Invite him to lift you up. Let's take this one step further. Jesus becomes aware of the need because people let him know. People draw his attention to it. So to take this one step further, who needs to have this kind of encounter with Jesus in your life that isn't here this morning? Who needs for Jesus to draw near to them, to make a connection, to lift them up, to make them well? Who will you pray that they have this kind of encounter with Jesus? Who will you pray for today that they will have this kind of encounter? Take a moment. Lock their name into your mind so that when you leave this place, you commit to praying for them, that they would have this kind of encounter, that as the Lord meets them, you might be able to celebrate what God has done. I mentioned earlier that this healing comes just before Jesus spends a whole evening healing and bringing freedom to a crowd from all over the village that is gathered at the door. Though Jesus has taught in the synagogue that day and there's an audience there, this is the first time he will have interacted with a crowd of this size and of this nature. So this is a pivotal moment because how he responds to crowds, to the idea of crowds, tells us a lot about who Jesus is. It tells us a lot about how he manages life, and it tells us a lot about why he is worth going all in on. To set the stage, I want to share two quick illustrations. In Rookie of the Year, after having his arm in the cast, 12-year-old Henry's tendons tighten to the point that he can throw a baseball at major league speeds. He and his best friends, along with everyone else in the stadium and everyone else watching on TV, discover that when he throws a ball straight from the outfield all the way to home plate. That's 300-plus feet for those of us who are not familiar with baseball fields. And he ends up being seen, getting noticed, and getting signed to the Cubs. He and his friends are super excited when this happens. He struggles a little bit at first, but eventually he becomes a hit. The crowds fall in love with him. They cheer his name, and he starts to get all the sorts of opportunities that a superstar or phenom like this, an athletic phenom, would get. It's a kid's dream, right? And it starts to go to his head, to the point where he neglects to show up for his friends, to what they had committed to do over the summer, fixing a boat together, because he decided to go film a commercial. He disappoints them. He lets them down. See, the attention and the clamoring of the masses had started to change him. And that change was not for good. Crowds can do that. Though there were many years from breaking up, the Beatles stopped playing commercial live concerts in 1966. There were a number of reasons why they stopped doing that, ranging from the quality of the equipment to be able to actually perform the songs that they were recording, to some safety concerns, to just sheer exhaustion. But I heard an interview with John that he gave a few years after the band had broken up that caught my attention. He talked about the concert at Shea Stadium in New York. And he talked about how the fans screamed the entire time. They weren't screaming the songs. They were just screaming at them. It was so loud that the band couldn't hear themselves play. He shared that during that last tour, it became apparent that these things had stopped being about the music for the people. It had become about the experience of being a Beatles fan at a Beatles concert and being able to say that you'd been at one. And John was glad that the people had had that experience. And he said that the experience at Shea was great, but it was that. It was an experience. It wasn't a concert. Now, those concerts on that last tour were shorter. They gave them greater exposure. They paid better. And they were a significantly different experience than the early years they had spent playing clubs in Europe. But to John, they weren't better. And to the band, they weren't better. Because that wasn't what the band set out to do. They didn't set out to set those kinds of experiences. They set out to make good music and play it for people. So they stopped touring. See, the crowd's demands can change one's purpose. When the crowd first comes, because word has spread in the village, Jesus heals, and he ushers in freedom for the people in the crowd who need it. This is his intent. This is his purpose. He is consistent. It's part of what he came to do. But he seems to know that it's not going to end with that evening. He seems to know as the day breaks that the crowds are going to come back, because they're going to want to see the miracle worker do his thing one more time. And if he does it one more time, they'll be back the next day to see it again. And this could be incredibly tempting. What an opportunity to set up shop for the miracle healing work in Capernaum and generate a large following of people who would come all over for a successful ministry. But this isn't what Jesus came for. And Jesus doesn't let the demands of the crowd set the agenda for his life. And he doesn't let the allure of the crowd alter his purpose. Folks, crowds are rarely satiated. Crowds always need more. And a miracle worker will never be without work. But Jesus didn't come to be the miracle worker of Capernaum. That's not what he came for. He came to save humanity. And what he does in response to this moment shows that he remains committed to that. So what does he do? Before the crowd comes back, he rises and goes to connect with the Father, the one who sent him, in solitude in prayer. See, with the Father, he's in a place where there are no demands being made on him. The Father doesn't need anything from him. So he goes and connects with the Father. And with the Father, he strengthens his most important connection. With the Father, he's able to remain centered. With the Father, he maintains clarity, not on what the immediate demand is, but on what is most important overall. And that leads him to do what appears to be a very counterintuitive thing. He abandons the crowd. He leaves the crowd. He leaves people who are going to be clamoring for him. He leaves people who are positively disposed to him. He leaves what looks like success because staying would have meant sacrificing his ultimate mission and purpose. If he'd have done that, if he'd have stayed in Capernaum, we might read records about a first century miracle worker who spent some time in Capernaum. But folks, what we wouldn't have is the story of the one who rescued us from the powers of sin and death and brought us into life everlasting. And I'd rather have that than the other, folks. That commitment to his mission and purpose enabled Jesus to know when to stay and when to go. It helped him keep the right plate spinning at the right time and know when to bring one plate down. It makes him worth trusting with all of who we are and all of our lives. It makes him worth going all in with. So if you've not yet made a commitment to Jesus, to give all your life to Jesus, make it today. Make it now. Don't let another moment pass. For all of us, let's follow what Jesus models for us. It's not always crowds that seek to set the agenda of our lives, that seek to commandeer our purpose, but what Jesus applies to the crowd applies to every area of life as well. So take stock of your life right now. What is setting the agenda? What is defining the purpose? Or what's looking to do those things? Identify. There's no shame here, folks. Identify what is setting the agenda or what is attempting to set the agenda of your life. Or what is attempting to define your purpose. And if it's anything outside of God, here's how you can stay the course to live the life you were made to live. Here's how you can follow Jesus' example. The first is obvious. Tend to your connection to God. Seems simple and straightforward, but it's a helpful reminder. The first step is to make space and time to connect with the Father. The Father knows what you were made for. The Father can guide and lead you. Once you tend to that connection, identify the places in your life where there is misalignment, or where you feel the pull into misalignment. The places where either the agenda is set poorly, or something else is trying to drive the agenda, or where you feel like your purpose has become slightly distorted. Maybe you've started to focus on just an aspect of your purpose, and you've lost track towards the entire purpose or mission. Note that Jesus doesn't let the immediate, even as if it is a form of success and a form of what he came to do, become the focus, the sole focus, at the expense of the larger mission. Once you identify those places, realign. Realign to your purpose in Christ, even if it feels counterintuitive. Once again, leaving the crowd feels like the wrong call in this moment. And yet it is obviously, as you read the rest of the story, the only call that he could have made to fulfill his mission. It may feel counterintuitive now, folks, but in the long run, you'll see that those choices align you to the purpose for which you were made. Connect to God. Assess the places of misalignment, and then align your purpose to Christ, even if it feels counterintuitive. The right place will be spinning, your life will be managed well, and you'll get to enjoy the life you were made for, the life to the fullest for all time as you follow Jesus. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you. Thank you for your tender and compassionate care. Thank you for your authority that brings healing and freedom. Thank you, Lord, that you model a life well lived and you navigate the tensions and complexities and show us how. Lord, give us faith and courage to make hard choices as we need to. Give us faith and courage to trust in you. Give us faith and courage to go all in. In your name, amen.